Coffee with Kenobi presents Resistance Reactions.
All pilots to your station.
You ready?
Let's do this.
Kasuda, good luck on tomorrow's big race.
I don't need luck.
Here we go.
You can't handle the hype. Line them up.
Follow my signals.
Get ready to be impressed.
When it comes to your mission at the spot, I don't want anything to do with it.
The First Order is clearly making weapons.
We're going to need all the help we can get.
I want the station completely destroyed.
It's been too long since we've seen some action.
You showing up always means trouble.
And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harris and David Modders.
Oh, this is exciting. I appear to be tingling all over.
Welcome, everybody, to the first episode of Resistance Reactions. Yay, woo, yo, woo, woo, woo. This is one of your hosts. I am Aaron Harris, and joining me is my wingman, Dave Modders. Dave, how you doing?
Good, buddy. I'm ready to fly.
Oh, we got a lot of flying, my friend.
Is that pretty bad? That's a bad pun.
Not a bad pun. Not yet. I'm sure we'll have a lot of them as we go, so I'm all about bad puns. Anyway, so if you recognize our voices, that is right. We are the same duo who hosted Rebels Reactions on the Coffee with Kenobi family of shows. We are continuing to do that as time permits, as we explore some of the additional stories that affect the Rebels characters and storyline, like the comics, books, stuff like that. But now we have Star Wars Resistance, which premiered, we're recording this on Monday the 8th, it premiered last night at 10 o'clock on the Disney Channel, or of course if you have the Disney Now app, you got to watch it when you first got up yesterday morning, Sunday morning, so which is pretty much what I did. And we're going to have a lot of fun with this show. Just want to go through and give a few housekeeping tips here. Of course, we do this show for our listeners, so we got a lot of ways you can stay in contact with us. We have, since this is a new show, I want to get it all out there up front. We are on Twitter at Resist Reactions. We are on Facebook. If you go to Facebook and you search for Resistance Reactions, you will find us. And you can join us up there as well. And of course, emails, Resistance, right now, emails resistancereactions@gmail.com, but that could change. But we are excited to have this opportunity to review Resistance. And I just want to say a quick thank you to Dan Z over at the flagship show. You may know Dan Z as the co-founder of the Coffee with Kenobi podcast family of shows. So thank you, Dan, for having faith and trust in David and I to fly with Resistance.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. Just want to echo what Aaron said there. Just really appreciate the opportunity. And we're going to do the best job we can with it.
That's all we try to do, is the best, and we have fun trying to do it. That's all we can try. And we hope you will have fun with us as we go through and review this show. Now, what we're going to do, I know if you watched anything on the Disney app, they released three episodes. They released the first three episodes, which was The Recruit, Triple Dark, and Fuel for the Fire. But they, on TV, they only released The Recruit. So what we are going to do, because some people may not have access to the app or so on and so forth, or whatever the situation may be, this week, this episode, we are focusing on the series premiere episode, which of course is The Recruit. It was a two-part episode. Well, eventually it'll be broken up in two parts, but it was a full hour episode which aired there. It was of course directed by Justin Ridge, Stuart Lee, Dave Filoni created and helped write, and it was just all around just a great episode. So, of course, let's just go ahead and start reviewing this episode. David, I know a lot of people were anticipating Resistance coming on the air, and there was some little bit of trepidation because of the type of animation they were using, with the very similar to anime type style, and there was some trepidation by a lot of fans about that. What are your thoughts after seeing the first episode here? What are your thoughts on the series so far?
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. You know, concern about the animation and concern about the age range that it's focused on and so on and so forth. I think, you know, a couple thoughts is that, you know, and you and I've talked about this with Rebels, you know, it did start slow. People were trepidatious about Ezra. You know, we know that he was kind of just called the street rat, or, you know, the Aladdin in Star Wars, and they didn't really know much about him. There was trepidation about that animation style, you know, right? Coming off of the Clone Wars and how beautiful that was. Yeah. And it will continue to be next year when Clone Wars finishes up on Disney streaming service. But, you know, I kind of feel the same way as those previous times. I just want people to be patient and just really kind of let this, you know, series sink in, you know, let it get, you know, several episodes in and really start to get a feel for the characters and the storyline and stuff like that. And of course, I think the animation is gorgeous. I just was like blown away. I'm like, gosh, this is great. I love it. I love how sharp it looks. And but you know, I enjoyed Rebels. I understood they didn't have Lucas's pocketbook open like they did for Clone Wars. I mean, Clone Wars was gorgeous. And, you know, I think Rebels has looked better as all the seasons have gone on. So I'm just asking people just be patient with it. Give it some time and let the characters grow on you and just have a lot of fun with it.
I definitely have to agree with that. I mean, it's one of these things that's going to take some getting used to. I know there was a little, definitely some, again, like you said, trepidation around when Rebels was released, too. That coming off the heels of a fan favorite Clone Wars, so it's definitely going to be fun to see where they carry this. It's going to be a lot of excitement here, and they held no punches starting right off the bat in this episode. A lot of little Easter eggs here and there if you keep your eye out for them, and it was a lot of fun. So this episode, of course, was written by Brandon Allman. And, of course, let's just jump right into it. This show opens with the view of a planet. And it looks like you got another planet almost coming in and it starting to eclipse it. And after a few seconds, you realize it's not a planet. It's an R2 unit, which I thought was absolutely perfect. Then we see those X-Wings come flying in. I mean, this was the perfect opening scene for this series. It felt real star. It felt like Star Wars. It felt energetic. It felt action packed because they were being chased by a random red TIE fighter. It was almost like remember the TIE interceptors from Return of the Jedi. This was a modified version of that, it seemed, and it was very enjoyable. What were your thoughts on the opening sequence, David?
Oh, exactly. I was thinking about, you know, the movies and where they start off out in space. You know, I guess Rebels started with what? Ezra, you know, on Lothal, and the Star Destroyer comes overhead. But in this one, they really do the classic, you know, they're in space. And I love that. I didn't know what I was seeing until I'm like, oh, it's an astromech head. And it's just so well done. And I love it. You know, starting off super exciting, just like I think about, you know, episode 4, seeing that for the first time in theaters in 1977, and it's action-packed to start. Here comes the Carillion Corvette and the big Star Destroyer behind it, and you're like, holy mackerel. You know, Dan talks about in media res, it just drops you in, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what this one does, and it's just, it's gorgeous. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. I mean, it drops you right in to action right off the bat, because you got this star-studded, or this ace pilot TIE fighter chasing them down. As they say, they're, of course, on a mission to deliver some intel to the Resistance. We learn that these guys are actually New Republic fighter pilots. And actually, what's really cool about this with this episode is we get a look on their helmets and on their uniforms, the first actual on-screen look at a New Republic logo on screen, which was absolutely gorgeous. I know they described the logo in the Aftermath trilogy of books. That logo was first introduced and described, but we actually get to see it here live. And it was absolutely stunning with the what looked like the original Rebel logo with the star, the sun coming out from behind it. Really cool. This is also where we get to see Poe Dameron for the first time as he comes flying in. He's not in his black TIE fighter, though. He's in that more like the white and blue one that we see at the opening of Force Awakens. And he winds up helping save Kaz, who was one of the New Republic X-Wing pilots who was tasked with delivering this information. And between the two of them, they're able to disable, and or not necessarily disable, because he was able to escape, but they were able to get a score hit on the red TIE fighter, and of course it then made its escape, which led me to my very first question of the series when I watched it. And I was watching it, and this, I watched the whole scene, and as soon as it happened, I said it out loud: since when do TIE fighters have hyperdrives?
Right.
That was one of the first things that popped into my head when I saw it jump into hyperspace. I'm like, wait, what? Since when do they have hyperdrives?
Well, the bucket list, you know, we got to tell people about the bucket list.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the bucket list, you know, Aaron and I on Rebels Reactions have always encouraged people to go to StarWars.com and go to the episode guide. And you know, we knew that coming into this series that they would have something, you know, like an episode guide as well. So far, it's not as extensive as it was for each of the episodes of Rebels or the Clone Wars. But they do have a thing called Buckets List, and it goes over, and I think if I got this straight, 8 different points. One of them was about hyperdrives being installed in these newer First Order TIEs, and that's pretty cool. It shows, again, this beginning of the First Order and a buildup in them. And I guess maybe not even a beginning, because we're 6 months before The Force Awakens. So they're pretty far along in their development. So that was pretty cool to see that. I mean, we saw X-Wings, you know, shooting into hyperspace in The Force Awakens, right? And in The Last Jedi, right?
Well, we had X-Wings jumping into hyperspace in the original trilogy, too. In Return of the Jedi, they're jumping into hyperspace. Luke jumps into hyperspace in his X-Wing when he's in Empire, says he's going to Hoth, or not Hoth, but Dagobah, then Cloud City.
Yeah.
Then Return of the Jedi, we get the best view of it because we see all the fighters jumping into hyperspace there, the A-Wings, the B-Wings, X-Wings, the Y-Wings, as the Rebel fleet's getting ready to jump in and start their attack on the Death Star. So, I mean, that was one of the things that the Rebel Alliance always had an advantage with, was that the fighters they were used, even though they were older and not as advanced as the TIEs that the sheer number of TIEs that the Empire had, their advantage was the fact that they were a little bulkier, but they had hyperdrive engines, they were a little more maneuverable, and they were able to pack a little bit more of a punch than the quick speed twin ion engine.
Yeah. Thus Thrawn's trying to develop the TIE Defender, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, we're already talking about Rebels again.
I know. We're going to stay on target here. Okay.
Yeah, we're now 14 minutes into our new series, and we're already talking about Rebels. So, that's all good. We'll probably be making references to Rebels and everything else. And if you've listened to Rebels Reactions long enough, you know at some point there'll be a Star Trek reference in here. Okay. Haven't figured out what it's going to be yet, though. It'll just present itself to me when it's time, I know.
It will. It'll come.
It always does. It always does. Resistance is futile. So, but on, we actually see a Corellian Corvette, like you mentioned earlier, come out of hyperspace, and that's where they take Kaz on board to fix up his ship, which I never realized the Corellian Corvette actually had docking bays to fix fighters, but okay. I didn't think they were that big with landing bays, but could be wrong. But what I found very unique about this ship is something that Poe Dameron said. He said, as Kaz is talking about how he can't believe he's on this type of ship. He's always heard about him and always wanted to be on board one of these ships. He can't believe it's still going and everything. Poe Dameron makes a statement that this ship has seen a lot of action. It's been in action since the Battle of Scarif till the Battle of Jakku. So, which brings me to could this possibly be the Tanada 4?
I don't know. The coloration is blue, right? Whereas isn't the Tanada 4 have it was more red?
More red and orange, but it doesn't mean it couldn't have had a paint job.
Sure.
Because you're talking 30 plus, 40 plus years.
Yeah.
In the interim, but for a ship to have specifically from Scarif to, I mean, we know there were other Corvettes there. I'd have to go back and watch Rogue One. I'm sure there were other Corvettes there. How many of them actually escaped, I don't know, because I'm pretty sure it was a Corellian Corvette that actually crashed into Vader's Star Destroyer as it came out of hyperspace. But we know the Tanada 4 gets captured by the Empire.
Right.
We don't see it destroyed. Last time we see it, it is in the hangar of Vader's Star Destroyer. For all we know, they kept it. And it could be something that they got their hands back on. Who knows? That's a good question to pose, whether or not this is actually the Tanada 4 or not, because I would find it very interesting if it was.
Well, and this is where I would say, Aaron, you know, like we were saying to open the show, to really give this show time to develop and percolate, is that, you know, they drop a lot of these little tidbits. I don't know that the young kids will pick up on them, but us adults will. And this is where it can be a lot of fun, a lot of these little details, you know, and you picked up on them and I picked up on them. And again, that's where it's going to be a lot of fun for us adults watching this. All the little Star Wars trivia and lore and Easter eggs.
Oh, no, absolutely. And this show's got its share of it. I love the scene. I mean, as the story goes on, I love the scene how we get our second mention of a refresher in Star Wars. Remember, we had the refresher mentioned during Rebels, and now we have it again. It's the Star Wars version of a bathroom, and that's where BB-8 takes Kaz to the refresher.
Yeah,
not every day we get bathrooms in Star Wars, so takes special shows for that to happen. But then it continues on. He comes out of the refresher and he winds up standing outside a door where he hears Poe talking to General Leia Organa, which was absolutely awesome. And he's just trying to eavesdrop in on the conversation. And all of a sudden the door opens and he falls in, and there she is. She's not in the room. She's a hologram at that point, just kind of a holographic image of the general. But we never hear her say anything in this episode. She just kind of stands there, looks at him, looks at Poe, looks at him, looks at Poe, and the whole time Kaz just snapped into attention. And I'm telling you, that was the most awkward attention stance I'd ever seen.
This is part of the humor that you know, they animated Kaz is very effusive, you know, in body movements, facial expressions, and so on. And it's funny. I like it. I you know, when he snapped to attention, it's just so overdone and so uncomfortable. And of course, Leia looks at him like, "What are you doing?" So it's fun.
Oh, it definitely is. And I mean, the whole thing with Kaz, and one thing I've been noticing, and I even read it in, I can't remember where I read it, but they were talking about how with the development of Kaz, they were developing somebody who on land was very unsure, was very clumsy type person, and it wasn't all, didn't have a lot of confidence there, but put him in a pilot seat and it's a completely different person. And you can see that in this episode, because you see him in the X-Wing and he's confident about what he's going to do in that X-Wing. He gets on 1084 and he's falling through doors. He's kind of overwhelmed. Even when he gets to the Colossus, he's just, you know, he's all over the place. He's very clumsy. He's very gullible, and has that personality. Overall, with Kaz, what do you think of the overall character that as he's been developed so far?
Yeah, very likable. And in fact, you know, when you mentioned you'd read that somewhere, that is, I did write that down, Better in the Air Than on Land. I believe that's in the episode guide, and in the description of him there on the episode guide. But I do know for a fact, you know, I listened to the last Coffee with Kenobi where Dan had his brother-in-law go out to Los Angeles for the media gathering for the premiere of this show. Mm-hmm. And there's an interview that his brother-in-law records, and it's the writer, that Brandon Allman, is it A-M-A-N? And yeah, he talked about that very thing in that interview, that he very much wanted him to, you know, for kids to identify with him, that he's not perfect. He is clumsy, but he can do well at certain things, and one's going to be flying. And so I do really like that contrast, but it immediately makes him approachable to kids. And and I think that's a great thing. So, you know, they've got the issue with his dad, right? That was part of the, you know, the next scene there that, you know, he goes through. He's, you know, as Poe is trying to recruit him into being a spy, he says, I've got to talk to somebody first. And he's got this struggle with his dad, which is immediately, you know, reminiscent of Luke and his dad, this issue of fathers, you know, and what type of role are they going to play in your life. So this is immediately interesting to see, you know, and specifically to see how this develops with his dad over time, how much they'll have his dad in, who knows. But he is a senator, right? The show tells us that. Kaz tells us that. And but overall, he seems like this really great character that he's going to have a good arc. You're going to see him really develop. There's no question. If just like they did with Ezra and how they developed him, I think they're going to do a bang up job with Kaz's character development as well.
Absolutely, I agree with you there. And it's going to be interesting. Is because I got a feeling we're not done with the storyline with how he relates to his father either. I think this is just the tip of the iceberg. And it's just going to be interesting to see how they develop that relationship, or if we'll actually ever get to see his father, who is actually a New Republic senator, come with, that he says in the show, which is great. Now, after that, of course, Kaz agrees to be the spy. They wind up boarding a shuttle and going to the Colossus, which, of course, and I just blank on the planet's name, Castellan. Castellan. It goes, which is on Castellan. And I thought it was really cool, the shuttle that they were flying. I don't remember the episode with the Rebels. Everything goes back to Rebels. It reminds me of the shells they were using in Rebels when they had the R2 and R2-D2 and 3PO's guest had the guest stint there at the beginning of the show, first season.
That was a
shuttle.
Yeah, that was Droids in Distress.
Yes.
And yes, it was in that. And of course, we saw it in several other ones as well, episodes. I think they crashed a few of them. I know Sabine was jumping from one and saw one going down pretty hard. I don't know, was it season 3? Yeah, they've used that shuttle quite a bit.
Yes, absolutely, they have. So they're still apparently in use. So they wind up going to Castellan and post filling them in. You know, they know the First Order is doing a military buildup, and the intel that they brought them was that the First Order is going to launch a strike on the New Republic, and Poe's mission is to find out where and how. So part of that's going to be use Kaz on Castellan there at the Colossus, where he's going to have to blend in and be a part of this crew that he winds up meeting. And the Colossus is actually a beautiful facility, just sitting there and above the water. It's very picturesque. I like it a lot. And it's very interesting because when they land, we see right off the bat, we see creatures galore in this episode. I thought it was absolutely awesome. It honestly felt like we were back in the cantina again.
It did. In fact, in my prep for this, I wrote down a section called creatures, or species that we see. In fact, I had to get out my Star Wars Visual Dictionary for some help. But we see Bith. Mm-hmm. We see, of course, High Phazon is a Rodian.
Yeah.
He does not speak in this episode, but we see him. He gets out of his ship. We see Gorgs, which are the little cute things that everyone on Twitter wants plushes of. They're all asking Tracy Canobio for plushes of these Gorgs, right? They originally were seen in episode 1. Jar Jar, right, tried to eat one.
Yeah, I was going to say Jar Jar thought they were pretty good.
Yeah, Jar Jar liked them. We've seen a Shatter fan. That is Orca. That's Bobby Moynihan's character. I thought initially Bobby Moynihan might have been that guy the big guy throwing people off the side. It's not, but Bobby Moynihan plays a Shatter fan, named Orca. We see obviously a Nitko, which is Nico, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Eternal Optimist. We see Athorians. We see the Hammerheads.
Yep.
We see a lot of Snivians, which are the Snaggletooths.
Yep.
The one guy, I'm trying to piece a lot of this together, he's the one who messed up Kaz playing darts. He's an Alina, if I have that correct. And we've seen them. One of them was a pod racer. I think I've got that right.
Yeah.
But I think he is an Alina. We have a Clatoonian. The guy who I thought was a Dewootin, the one throwing people off.
Yeah,
I thought he was a Dewootin, like the big guy in The Force Awakens. Force Awakens,
yeah, I remember you telling me that.
Right, and I was going through, I went to Balza Gruul, B-O-L-Z-A, Gruul, and he's the big heavy, but it says he's a Clatoonian. He's not a Dewootin. And he's the one who sells Gorgs there on the Colossus, but I want to make sure that I corrected that, because I know on some previous episodes that we've recently recorded, I thought he was a Dewootin, but he's a Clatoonian. So there you go. So we've got all that. The only other one I needed help from you on. No, okay, two more. The Fregosians. Remember that guy vacuuming, cleaning? You know who's got the little. He's a Fregosian. Fregosian?
He looked like a pumpkin to me.
Exactly. Looks like a pumpkin with like little red eyes. And then the last one that I couldn't get, I'm trying to remember, and Andy Gutierrez is going to be mad at me, but they have a character back there, female, who looks like one of the dancers in Jabba's Palace in the special edition. But What was the name of the character that Andy plays in Rebels? I can't remember the name, but I looked in the visual dictionary, but again, I didn't have enough time tonight. But I was trying to track down what she is. She's not a Twi'lek, but that's the kind of the last species I couldn't get down before we started recording tonight. But I don't know, someone can maybe, you know, text or email in. But you know who I'm talking about. Remember who, you know, Andy Gutierrez, you know, they made a character after her. But anyways, yeah, I don't...
I'm trying to remember myself what it was. Let's take a look here. See if I can Google it real quick.
Sure. What is the species that, yeah, Andy Gutierrez? And there's one more that I looked around too, and I couldn't find them. Is there's quite a few of these characters that they look kind of like, they have like kind of three things that come off their head. Mm-hmm. They have longer fingers. I don't know what they're named. I was looking at all these different species in the visual dictionary, and I just couldn't find that. So Andy Gutierrez's character and those guys, but I'll figure it out soon enough. But yes, it was creatures galore on the Colossus.
It's Gutierrez, the Iron Squadron,
right?
That was it.
Yeah, that was her name. Do we
that
know
was her name? Doesn't say what the character was, just said it was designed to resemble her from Iron Squadron.
Yeah. And I think I figured out one more species. Aunt Z, right? She's like Ankar Plutt.
Yes.
So I went to the Force Awakens visual dictionary before we started recording, and I wanted to look at the description of Ankar Plutt in there. And it describes him as a Krollute, Krollute. I believe that's correct.
Okay.
So there you go.
There we go. Well, if anybody knows the species of Gutierrez from the Iron Squadron episode of Rebels, let us know. That way we can update that next time for our next show. But we want to continue on with the show because we got creatures everywhere through this episode. And that's what makes the appeal of the Colossus so much fun. And the first regular character that they bump into on the Colossus is Neeku. And I don't know about you, the first time I saw Neeku and I heard him talk in this episode, I was like, I like this guy. He was just so much fun. He takes everything he's very literal. Whatever you say, it's gospel to him. I'm the greatest star pilot in the galaxy. He's the greatest star pilot in the galaxy. And then it starts to rumor getting around that Kaz is the greatest pilot in the galaxy. And it was great with him. Because he's always so happy. He's always so cheerful. He's almost like an eternal optimist. And we see it spill over into the bar scene. When they go to the cantina and they meet Jaeger for the first time, and things kind of get out of hand, it was a lot of fun. He's got one of the, and Neeku, even once he realizes that Kaz isn't the best pilot in the galaxy, what's really funny is he's like, I'm just going to go out on the deck and contemplate your deception. and kind of walks out. And it was just there's just something about him that I just really like. What did you think of Neeku?
Oh yeah, you know, if you don't like him, you've got some serious issues, I think. You know, Josh Brenner does the voice, and it's perfect for that character. you know, just like they've done in all these other animated shows, they're getting the right people for the right characters. And so I love him as the Eternal Optimus. I think Dave Filoni calls him a genius, but also an oddball too, you know. And I love when, you know, like you said, he goes out on the outside and is just contemplating Kaz's deception. Kaz goes out there and says, "Well, you took what I said and you ran with it." And he's like, I didn't run anywhere." And I just love his literalism, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I loved him clapping when he saw the fireball ship. No one else is excited to see it, and he's actually just got this soft little clap. I don't know if you remember that part. And it's just so good, so good. And he's right at the top from, I think, you know, some of the reactions of people of being one of their favorite characters. He's going to be right in the running there with everybody else as favorite.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I've seen a couple polls already about who their favorite character is so far from that they've seen so far. And he's actually won every single one of those polls so far, which is, I'm not surprised. Not surprised at all. And it's Kaz's relationship with Neeku is what gets him into the race for the first time. Because now Neeku wants him to have the opportunity to prove he's the best. That's why everybody doesn't think he's the best. So they're going to make him race. And that's when Kaz is informed, you know, if you don't race, that's why they throw you over the side of the Colossus.
Yeah, head first.
Head first. Head first. Now I want to talk about Jaeger for a minute, because we haven't talked about him, because we come to this cantina bar to meet Jaeger for the first time. And this is apparently somebody Poe has known for a long time. And they obviously have a very interesting relationship, because when Jaeger sees Poe, he's like, you know, it's always trouble when you come around.
Yeah.
So I would love to find out what their backstory is, because we know Jaeger apparently from the descriptions and everything that we got before the show aired. He's a former Rebel Alliance pilot, so he's got he's a war hero to a certain extent, and now he's just running a mechanic shop on the Colossus. So very interested to find out what his backstory is there, and how it involves Poe.
Yeah, and to piggyback on what you're saying, I think about, just kind of coming full circle, you know, Kaz at the beginning talking to Poe on that curling Corvette, you see the resistance to the call, or the hesitation to the call, right? The hero's journey. And we see it a bit here in Jaeger, right? I was going to say that, right? I've been calling him Jaeger, but everything in the show says Jaeger. They kind of changed it up on us, Aaron. But you can see the resistance to the call there. You know, he even tells, right, Kaz, you know, I'll house you and you can be a mechanic, but when it comes to this spy stuff, I don't want anything to do with it. So almost the reluctant hero again. We see it in Kaz and we see it in Jaeger, and I agree with you. I'm interested to learn more about his backstory, and we were just, like I said, the same way with Rebels, wanting to know more about each of those characters. And that already tells me, you know, how good they are at storytelling, when, you know, like, I want to know more about these people versus being I don't care. I do. I mean, I want to know who the person is, you know, like that Potar, who is helping the First Order, you know, on the Colossus. And I do want to know more about, you know, Neeku's background, Kaz, obviously Tam, you know, Bucket and all them. So, Jaeger's going to be a good one. He's got the potential to have a lot of, a lot of really good, rich, meaty background. It really feels like that.
Yeah. Oh, he definitely does. And we're definitely going to see a lot of that going forward. They go outside to watch the race, and this is where things start to get a little interesting there, because he winds up having to pick his opponent for this race. They give him a list of pilots to choose from of the aces. Of course, Hype, Faison was one, Griff was the other. I'm blanking on everybody's name now.
Bo Keevil
was one.
Yeah. And let me get it. I got it right here. I don't want to mess up for it's where are my aces? Here, Freya Fenris. There we go.
Yeah, Freya. There we go.
Yeah, Freya.
And so it definitely where he gets together with he has to pick his opponent. So what does he do? He picks Tora Doza. Which was number 5 on the list. You know, you would think number 5 would be the worst. You know, if you're ranking them like that, 5 would be the worst. Her little card pops up, and it's all in Arabesh. And what's great about the online at the episode guide on StarWars.com is it actually translates her card from the screen. Toradoza's stats are actually translated. And it reads time in Toradoza time in the top 5, 100%. Challenge rate 87%. Finishes 100%. She's finished 100% of all of her races. Wins 100%. And this is the one I love. Wins by disqualification 100%. She wins all of her races by her opponents being disqualified.
Right. I think they have the ability to shoot at each other with, like, kind of like you could see it periodically throughout this episode, right? They've got little things they can shoot. And even Yeager says that she won't hesitate to take you out. And I think either by, you know, it almost looks like, forgive me, phasers, you know, Star Trek reference.
Hey!
Yeah, right. You know, they look like, you know, they're not lasers, but they're kind of like the more white, round, kind of bluish balls they shoot out. It almost seems like every ship has that, and you can hit the person in front of you, it looks like. Mm-hmm. And we'll obviously learn a lot more about these races as the series goes on, but and then top speed, right? That's the last one, 92%. Exactly. She must have not raced against Hype Faison right there, right? Remember that, where he wins? I guess she wasn't in that. I know Griff Halloran was in it. Bo Keeble was in it. Mm-hmm. But I guess she wouldn't have raced in that particular one.
No, not if she's 100% win rate. She would not have raced in that one. Because Faison won that race we see there.
And I wanted to jump in here. This scene, Aaron, I was cracking up. When they put the camera on Kaz and he picks it and everyone like starts shaking their head, you know. Kaz like, what, that's bad? You know, it's just great. And he just, you know, just all the little play by the announcer and Kaz, it's so funny. And then I love how Yeager and everyone around him kind of pull out of the screen. They don't want to be seen with the greatest starfighter pilot in the galaxy. You know, it's just so well done. Like, I love stuff like that. It's just, it's fun. I'm just laughing and cracking up at Kaz's expense.
Oh no, absolutely. It was a great scene. It reminded me a lot of what you would see at the sporting events when they start putting fans on the big screen and everybody starts diving out of the way or somebody gets that lost, the deer lost in a headlights look. They ask him, what's his name? What's your name? He goes, Kaz. Kaz. All right, Kaz.
I love that.
And what playing off of that, the announcer that was there talking was actually voiced, if it sounded familiar, was actually voiced by Greg Proops. Who actually voiced the two-headed announcers from the pod race in Phantom Menace. It's not the same announcer. They're specifically to it. They address this in the episode guide. It's not the same announcer. It's just a copycat invoking, like, you know, you get people on the radio trying to do that classic radio voice. And that's essentially what this guy was doing for the race. But it was actually voiced by the same guy from The Phantom Menace.
That's so cool they got the guy back. And the announcer's name in it is Jack Sivrak. That's what they, you know, at the very end when you look at all the, you know, the end of the episode and they give you the voices and stuff. So, and who the character is. And I'm like, okay, I had to put two and two together. So Jack Sivrak. So that sounds like a great announcer name. So that was so good. You know, and it's so distinct, his voice. But that was really a nice homage to episode one.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. It was. And this is where, from here out, where it starts to get built up into the to what winds up being the climax of the episode, which winds up being the race. We see him having to get together parts for the ship, and that's where we actually meet Orca and Flix. Yes.
Yep.
Yes, Flix and Orca, which were two very interesting people, two interesting creatures. They run the Office of Acquisitions, as they called it. It's basically your run-of-the-mill parts store. It's your pet boys on Colossus. So
yeah.
which is a funny scene in and of itself, because Niku takes Kaz in there, and Kaz is like, we need parts for Jaeger, or what? Jaeger, not Jaeger. Jaeger. Is it Jaeger?
Yeah.
Jaeger's ship. And they're like, not the fireball, right? Yes, the fireball. And they start laughing, and then he shows them the list, and they're like, oh, wait, he's serious.
Yeah, and Flick says, how unfortunate.
Exactly.
I love.
And they start pulling all the parts together, and Kaz is like, you got Yeager's credit card, right? Credit chip, right? And he's like, oh, heavens no, I don't. The pilot pays for it all. He's like, the pilot? He's like, I don't have any credits. And all of a sudden you see Flix and Orca pop up. Wait, you don't have any credits? Well, no parts. They stop working.
I really like these guys. Again, I just, one of the senses I get, especially when Niku talks to Orca and says, we've been friends for a long time, and Orca's willing to give him some secondhand parts and things like that. I get a sense you're going to see these two characters, you know, play this key role where they end up really liking Kaz, and they kind of come through at times, you know, kind of like Poe did at the beginning of this episode, where he actually shoots the Major Von Reg, you know, in the red, the Crimson Stormtrooper, whatever he shoots at Kaz there, he, you know. Poe comes in and shoots him away. I just got this feeling that Orca and Flix are going to be so critical in terms of, you know, of course the parts and stuff like that, but it just feels like a friendship too. I really like these two. Jim Rash as Flix and Bobby Moynihan as Orca. I love the voices and how they've put these people with these particular animated characters.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And it's very... very interesting. I love how they cast these episodes out. That's one thing Lucasfilm has always been good at, is getting the right people with the right voices for the right job. And it seems like they've hit it out of the park again with Resistance. So,
oh, no doubt.
All right. So what we're going to do real quick is we're just going to take a quick break, and we will come back and we will continue with our review of the premiere episode of Star Wars Resistance, The Recruit. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to our review of The Recruit. I'm Aaron, and joining me is David. And let's continue on with the premiere episode here of Star Wars Resistance. When we left off, we were in Orca and Flix's Office of Acquisitions getting the parts needed. When they realized there were no credits, so they decide they will, you know, have mercy on this poor guy, and if he can just get him something to eat, they'll give him some secondhand parts. And this is when they tell them that they want the Gork.
Mm-hmm.
So they go out. Niku takes him over to get the Gork, and fortunately, it's the big guy throwing people the. Guy selling the Gorg is the big guy throwing people over the side of the Colossus, which made for an interesting encounter at that point. mean, to back up a little bit, we skipped right over the bar fight. I just realized that in the earlier in the episode when they meet Jaeger, Poe and Jaeger step outside for a conversation, so Poe could try to convince him to help out in this spying mission. And while they're waiting, you know, Kaz has his Kaz moments and winds up throwing a dart, plays a game of darts with the this little guy, and is winning till the guy rigs one of the darts, and the last dart he throws sticks right in the middle of the big guy's back, which was absolutely hysterical. And of course, that starts an all-out fight at that point, which eventually is broken up by Jaeger. Jaeger. You know, I'm going to mess this up.
I think we will quite a bit with him.
This will be my mess up for the whole series. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah. So we'll have plenty of Kaz or Carabas moments with that. Yeah.
Jaeger.
Yeah.
Jaeger. Not Chuck. Not Chuck Jaeger.
No.
Jaeger.
Yes. No, but the big guy, again, is a Clatoonian. Remember, it's Bolza Gruul. Now, I was trying to hear, you know, actually Jaeger say his name. And that's one of the things it says in the episode guide, is that he sells Gorgs there on the platform to earn his keep and stuff. I saw him behind the bar, though, there, too, with Aunt Z. So he's kind of like the heavy for her as well.
Yeah, it seems to be that he's pretty much the bet enforcer.
If
the person refuses to race, or doesn't pay up, he's the one that pays everybody a visit. Which I can't say I blame him. He's quite a husky fellow there.
Yes.
That they were take care of. Anyway, they get the Gorg, and what was great is he's sitting by the Gorg. He's like, "Who would want to eat these guys?" And all of a sudden, it grabs his finger, bites it, and he's like, "Oh, I will take this one," and all of a sudden it bites two more bites out of his finger.
Yeah.
Very comedic element there. It was very entertaining. So we get the parts, we wind up back in the hangar, and it was right before this we met Tam for the first time. Tam, of course, being the mechanic for this episode, as part of Team Fireball. Of course, we find out it's called Team Fireball because of the ship. The ship is called the Fireball. And the reason it's called the Fireball is because it always bursts into flames. According to Nico, though, it only bursts into flames when you accelerate, decelerate, try to turn, or land. Well, not all the time when you land, just most of the time when you land.
Oh, wow. Just torment Kaz's soul at that point, yes.
Oh, absolutely. And I want to go ahead and skip ahead to the race here, because the race is what really makes things happen for Kaz there. Of course, the race is over water, so if they crash, it's, you know, they're dead. But what's Earth in the water, chances are there's something bigger that's going to be there for them. But we see the race start up, the light turns green for the go, and his engines cut out, and when the clamps release, he just falls. And of course, Toradoza is way out there in the lead at that point. But once he gets the Fireball going, he is able to fly that thing like nobody else. And I love the animation they did as it's skimming the water, and the water's just shooting up behind it. Reminded me a lot of Force Awakens when the Resistance is coming across the lake toward Maz Kanata's castle.
Oh, definitely. And you know what else too, Aaron, as you're talking, one of the things that just strikes me as is the Fireball, you know, just the ship. It reminds me of, you know, when we're introduced to the Millennium Falcon, and Luke's like, "That, what a hunk of junk," you know, and this thing is just a hunk of junk. Kaz leans on it and parts are falling out of it. So it's so Star Wars, right? The lived in, used universe, you know. Mm-hmm. So it just screams Star Wars.
Oh, it definitely does. I mean, honestly, this is an insult to hunks of junk everywhere. It really is. Yeah. But they make it work and get it going. And what's unique about the race is they have to fly through the rings. And they have to fly through every ring. And the person to fly through the last ring, of course, is the winner. If you have ever played Star Fox out there, you know the ring race. And very similar to that, which was one of my favorite games growing up. But we see Kaz just begin to push it too much, and the engines start to cut out there. And he has to learn a valuable lesson. It's not all necessarily all about winning. It's about surviving. And so he winds up pulling back on the thruster so that the engines don't cut out, and he's able to still survive. And unfortunately, the engine does, the fireball does live up to its name. Boom! One of the engines catches fire, which unfortunately causes Kaz to crash. And we get to the next scene. Of course, Kaz is waking up on the flight deck, surrounded by Team Fireball and Tornadoza, who is there to check on him. And she's like, I'm glad you didn't die.
I know. Yeah, the first, just got to be there again to open wound pouring the salt, you know, for Kaz.
Exactly. He's like, and I love this. He's like, I won? And Tam's like, no, not even close.
Yeah, right. That's going to be a brother-sister rivalry there. And she talks a bit about that, too, in that interview you can hear on the main show, again, that, you know, right, that Dan's brother-in-law recorded. Susie McGrath, the voice actress, talks about that relationship a bit and the spunkiness of Tam. Yeah, they're going to have a lot of fun together.
Oh, they definitely are. It's going to be very interesting to see how that relationship progresses, how all of their relationships progress as they kind of meld into a family at this point. It's going to be interesting to see this advance. With Yeager is kind of Yeager is kind of the father figure there. For this family.
Definitely.
And of course, it's going to be a lot of fun going forward. Now, I know traditionally for those of you listening, you know on how we used to do things on Rebels Reactions, we usually would just give a quick synopsis of the episode, and then we would break jump into scenes that made that we would definitely want to talk about. And that's how the episodes are going to be going forward. But there was just so much in this episode that needed to be discussed. So the introduction of characters, the introduction to the Colossus. We needed to spread it out a little bit more and do a little bit more of a scene-by-scene type style dissection here. And I my favorite thing here is how they ended this episode. You know, they always end it on even though Kaz survives the flight, there's a good laugh, he's alive, it was nowhere near close to it. It left you feeling good, especially after the conversation with Yeager. You know, you're going to be a part of my crew. You stay with me, I'll put you up. But, you know, when it comes to your spying, I want nothing to do with it, whole nine yards. And it leaves you feeling on a good note till the closing scene of the show, when you see that red TIE fighter come out of hyperspace again, of course flown by Major Von Riggs, and of course he comes out and he immediately right in front of a series of First Order Star Destroyers who request him to identify himself, and he says he identifies himself and sends his clearance codes, and he's at Starkiller Base. We get to see Starkiller Base in this. And we saw it in Force Awakens. We saw it destroyed in Force Awakens. But we get to see Starkiller Base in this. And he's saying to inform Phasma that he's got some information, that he's back. And and that's where this episode ends at that point. How did you feel seeing Starfield Base? I just said Star Filler Case. How did you feel, David? Star Killer Base. Maybe well, I should talk in my radio voice from now on, you know? Maybe I'll get everything straight.
You and I could be Foden Bead. We could just do that, yes. No, you know, this is what I was kind of alluding to earlier when, and I love that you brought up the issue of this Corellian Corvette and, you know, was this the one, you know, if it was in the Battle of Scarif all the way to the Battle of Jakku, you know, is that the Tantive IV? And here's another one. These are these little pieces that I mentioned that, that really get me going. And I just know that they're going to put this stuff in to keep us adults really interested in this. You know, they got the stuff for the kids, they've got the stuff for the adults. And it's this little bits and pieces of information showing us, you know, Starkiller Base and in the setting being 6 months before The Force Awakens. I'm curious, you know, if they're going to show us some more stuff on it, you know, them, you know, trying to finish, you know, the base itself. You know, obviously see some of the machinations of Phasma on there. It just, it's really intriguing. And it's really fun to, again, fill in this gap. Again, I'm not sure how much they will fill in, but they're going to throw enough out there to keep us interested. So I was really, it was animated so well. It was really cool looking. I want to learn more.
Oh, definitely. I want to learn more as well. And we will, as the series goes on, we're going to learn more. And it's going to be a blast going forward. David, when it comes to your thoughts on this episode overall, what are your final thoughts on the series premiere here of Star Wars Resistance?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no. Several points. You know, one is, you know, I enjoy this premise, the whole idea of Kaz playing a spy and trying to figure out, you know, who is this person that is helping the First Order. I love that. I already enjoy these characters. You and I have talked, you know, about it already this episode. I'm really interested in learning more about all of them. We haven't even met Griff Halloran yet. We've met him through some previews, but it'll be interesting as he comes in and hype phase on as well. Another final thought is I just wrote down, you know, this is aimed at a younger audience than the Clone Wars and Rebels. You can see it in the behaviors of Kaz and the way that he's animated. But just like you said, I wrote down, this is going to be fun for adults too. It'll be fun, exciting, and this will get kids into Star Wars. It'll be their intro into it. For some kids, it was Clone Wars, right? 10 years ago, it got them into Star Wars. For some kids, it was Rebels. You know, for me, it was the movies back when I was a kid. That was my intro. But this is really going to pull kids in. It's going to be a lot of fun for them. And so a little note I put to just kind of share with people is just have the right level of expectations for this. And a word that you and I have used repeatedly throughout this is just have fun. It's going to be a fun show. Two other points. One, I'm really looking forward to, you know, who will visit this platform, the Colossus platform. The possibilities are limitless. I'm excited to see who comes. You and I have already talked about who we think might, but we'll not speculate, right, on this. We'll just kind of think about it to ourselves. But it's going to be exciting to see who visits in the hopefully this season and hopefully seasons plural to come. And the last point, as I thought was just kind of interesting to me, is again to see the mentor-mentee relationship. You know, as a psychologist, it's always interesting to me to see the teenage brain and how it works, particularly when they're getting advice from a mentor or an adult. And you alluded to this just a few minutes ago, which is Yeager trying to guide him and say, hey, pull it back. And he actually did. He apologized. He goes, I'm sorry, Yeager, I didn't pull back fast enough, but he did. And I really like that because I wrote down to myself, I thought about a lot of the mentors and mentees we've seen in Star Wars, and I wrote down Luke and Ben, Luke and Yoda, Ahsoka and Anakin, Anakin and Obi-Wan, and now Kaz and Yeager, you know, and it's always good to see people learn. And I'm really hoping that kids will we'll really learn from this, learn from Kaz and Tam and some of these other characters, how to grow and be a better person. And so I think that'll be a fun part of this show too, and a good part.
Oh, I completely agree. It's going to be a great show for the kids. It's going to be a lot for them to learn. Being a dad of two myself, I'm excited for this. I'll admit, this is the first time I've sat down and watched a Star Wars show. I mean, my girls really didn't, my oldest especially, really wasn't into, isn't really not into Star Wars. It's just not her cup of tea. My youngest, who's six, she's, if daddy likes it, she likes it. She has no clue what she's watching. She doesn't understand any of it. But she'll watch it with me. But my oldest actually sat down and watched all three episodes back to back with me and actually really enjoyed it. So this is something that the kids are going to enjoy. It's something that, you know, it's going to bring families together as they watch it. Just like Clone Wars and just like Rebels did. One of my friends got together with his brother and their boys, and they all had a watch party watching the first three episodes. And it's great just to see those type of type of show bring families together, which is ultimately, you know, everything is boils back down to family here. Star Wars always comes in. It always tells the story of the family. In Rebels, it was the family of the Ghost Crew. The movies has been the story of the Skywalker family. Vader, Anakin, Luke, Leia. And then, of course, the newer episodes, it's Han, Leia, and Ben. I mean, it's telling these stories, these family-based and oriented stories. And this series is going to, I'm feeling, going to continue that. And bring more families together as it does so.
That's well said. Well said, buddy.
Well, thank you. Thank you, thank you. So, overall, you know, I really enjoyed the episode. I thought it was a lot of fun. The animation was just, I absolutely loved it. It was, when they first announced the show, and they said it was going to be anime style, and I'm like, you know, I've never really liked anime. So I was a little sheepish at first, but then we start seeing the clips and the teasers and the trailers, and I was like, you know, this is going to be great. It's got a very '80s Saturday morning cartoon feel. For those of you that grew up in the '80s, watched all those Saturday morning cartoons with me. To me, it had that kind of feel to it. It was really exciting, and it's going to be fun to see where this show goes. Going forward, you know, if you've been listening to any of our review shows for any amount of time, you know that we always sit back and review, and not only do we review, but we also grade episodes as well. So David, of course, just like all the other shows, ABCD scale, how would you rate this episode?
Well, this is tough, right? You know, I guess I'm going by just really this first thing. I'm trying not to compare it to Clone Wars and Rebels. I'm just trying to take it within itself, you know. And I think just visualizing, I can't predict the future what other episodes are going to look like, but I think from story, I really enjoy it. Like I said, characters, I really enjoy it. I want to know more, which is a good sign. I want to ultimately figure out, you know, who this person is who's helping the First Order. So they pulled me in that way. I do like the humor. I get a kick out of it. I'm a big kid. But I guess I think I would go. I'm vacillating between an A- and a B+. I just know they're going to have episodes here as we go on and they build up that will be those A+ episodes, like Twilight of the Apprentice was for Rebels and so on. So I think let me go with an A- because of how well I think they did pulling me into this series. Let me go with an A-, and I know they're going to have A episodes and I know they're going to have A+ episodes. So let me go with an A-.
Okay, very good, very good. I put a lot of thought in this, and I tossed up for a while since I watched it yesterday how to grade this. It was a great episode. It was a great intro to the series. It was at times a little slow because we did have to. There was a lot of background information we had to get in place to start building off of. But they did a real good job telling the story and keeping it flowing and keeping it moving. For me, overall, I would give it a B+. Is where I would go. And the thing is, one thing I love about this is it's only going to get better from here. Things are going to get proved. He's getting settled in. We're going to see these relationships flourish. We're going to see him behind the cockpit. It's just going to be incredible to see where this show leads and see what kind of stories it has to tell. It's going to be a lot of fun. I sit back and you look at it, and we're used to Star Wars being on the ships in space and the constant flying around and moving very rarely. They were never usually limited to a station for a series, which is, they're limited to the Colossus here. For the story, they could leave the Colossus if they needed to, but the story's going to take place mostly on the Colossus. So I hearken back to... Here's where I get into the Star Trek references. I hearken back to... And Rob Wainford's going to love this, but I hearken back to Deep Space Nine, the series. Because when it first came out, Star Trek had always been about starships and going to different planets. And then you get Deep Space Nine where, boom, we're trapping everybody on a space station. There's only so much you can do at that point. But as the series went on, they developed the story so well, it became one of my top, of all the series they had, one of my favorites, next to Next Generation, then Deep Space Nine, in pecking order. But Deep Space Nine just got the stories they began to tell as it went on just getting so incredible. And then they wound up with opportunities to leave the station and so on and so forth as it went on, but as I'm sure they will do here eventually. But the stories and the character stories they were able to tell enhanced it so much that I have a feeling this is what we're going to start seeing from Resistance as well.
I agree. I Justin Ridge, he's learned from Dave Filoni, and Dave Filoni learned from George Lucas. And I think Justin Ridge, they've started strong, and I think as these seasons go on, it'll get stronger and stronger. There's so much potential here.
Absolutely, it sure is. And we're gonna get to see that. And what I want to do now is we've actually had some people send in their thoughts as we were posting on social media up until this point. We were that it was available. We've gotten a few followers in there, but we got a few people that did message us with their thoughts and feelings on Star Wars Resistance and on the premiere episodes. And so our first one that we received was actually from Cameron Ramos. Twitter handle is @CamRamos95. And he said, episode one thoughts. He goes, I didn't think I was going to like this show at all. But man, was I so wrong. What a great introduction to the series premiere. I know the first three episodes dropped on Disney Now, on the Disney Now app, but I waited till 10 p.m. that night so I could watch the first episode and talk about it live with my friends. Now that's dedication. If you got the app and you waited anyway, that is true dedication. I will tell you that right now.
Major props to Cameron.
Major props to Cameron. Let's see, where were we? Talk about with his friends. He goes, it was great. The animation was amazing. The story was fun. And getting to meet all the new characters on the Colossus was great. I think my favorite so far is Niku. I'm a big fan of his comic relief in the episode. And I'm really excited to learn more about the relationship between Kaz and his father. And I want to know more about Yeager's backstory. It's almost like he listened to the podcast before we recorded it.
Oh.
know more about Yeager's backstory and his relationship with Poe, and see how his relationship with Kaz develops. Overall, I give this first episode an A. Filoni has done it again. May the Force be with you all. Well, thank you so much, Cam. May the Force be with you. And definitely, like, you basically just summed up our podcast in one paragraph. Definitely, yeah, I agree with everything you said. It was a great, great episode. There's a lot of development opportunities, a lot of stories we want to see with you at Jaeger, Kaz. And I will say, as of right now, Neeku is still my favorite based on this episode. Neeku is my favorite so far.
Okay. Okay.
So, who's your favorite so far, David?
I'm Neeku as well.
Okay. All right. Perfect. All right. So, our next email is from Corey. His Twitter handle is @_CStanford. And Corey writes, "Didn't think I'd be into this show, but I ended up absolutely loving it. I thought it was really smart how they used Poe to legitimize Kaz's potential. I'm really looking forward to seeing how much they use Phasma. I think it's a great opportunity to give her screen time that she deserves, and I hope they take advantage. Lastly, the dogfight and the racing scenes were amazing. 10-year-old me wishes he could have watched this show." I absolutely agree with you. We know Gwendolyn Christie's reprising her role as Captain Phasma in the series. One of my biggest complaints about that character after seeing The Force Awakens was, you know, she was used to promote the movie so much and she was hardly in it. And when she was in it, it was, honestly, it stunk. I'm gonna be brutally honest with you. It stunk.
It did.
And then they said they were bringing her back in The Last Jedi, so I got excited again, and I was let down again.
I to this day, I still am not sure why it occurred that way for her. I really don't. I thought they were really going to correct that in The Last Jedi, but she just, man, so much potential, so much buildup, one of the best costumes, you know, armor. Just incredible, but just nothing for that character. I feel for Gwendolyn Christie. She's super excited about the character, but just wasn't given anything to do. So maybe some good stuff here. I hope.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. I think it's very cool. To build off what you said, I feel for Gwendolyn Christie too, because I mean, there you have one of the top a woman at the top of her field, and she's, you know, I felt she was sorely underused.
It'd be interesting if they ever explain that, because you have two different persons who did it. I mean, it was J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson. They just completely underused this character. I'm not sure why.
And I'm sorry, if JJ tries to bring her back in episode 9, I'm going to have an issue with that. You had a chance shot in episode 8, you blew it. Don't just let the sleeping dogs die. So
that's right.
So it'd be interesting. So to see how that works out there. We got where is that message? All right, so Fudgling.
Okay.
His Twitter handle is @FudgeAngelo. Commented on one of the tweets we were talking about Jaeger. He said, you know, Scott Lawrence is amazing. And Scott Lawrence, of course, is the voice of Jaeger. He said the voice acting and the voice directing in not only the first episode but the first three episodes is incredible, and Christopher Sean as Kaz was so good, and I have to agree with all of that. I mean, it was definitely, the voice talents did a phenomenal job. They were directed perfectly, and it's going to be great seeing them go forward. So we have one more email here, and Dave, you'll appreciate this one. This one, just simply, I'll read it and you can tell me who it's from. "I'm completely frustrated with the creatives at Lucasfilm. when they're going to focus more on me, I mean Wolf Tarkin. He is the true hero of the Star Wars universe. Kaz, boring. Poe, horrible pilot. Tam, she can't fix anything. Bucket, I would melt him in the scrap. Yeager, too nice. Niku, way too nice. Aaron and David, I'll keep listening to your new podcast, Resistance Reactions, but only so I can torment your souls. Tarkin out. I mean, Tarkanis out.
Well, he did say at, you know, at the end of Resistance, or at the end of Rebels Reactions, that when it came back, he was very upset. Now with Resistance Reactions, he's he's got a full-time job trying to torment our soul. He seems to have a great time doing that. I'm not surprised we got one from him for this first episode. I will not be surprised if he doesn't show up, you know, in future episodes commenting whenever we open it up to commentary. But we'll deal with him in time. We'll continue to read his emails and entertain him a little bit. But we disagree with everything he said there about Kaz and Tam and all these guys. And Niku, obviously Nico's our favorite, but Willard Tarkanis, you know, he's got some issues. He's got issues.
He does. He makes me wonder if he's got any friends. Who knows? Anyway, yeah. Definitely we want you to participate in our episodes each week as we review it. Of course, the next episode, of course, will be reviewed next week when it airs. That'll be the Triple Dark episode. Will be our next review. So if you've already watched the episode on the Disney Now app, remember, don't spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it yet. That would be awesome. Very cool of you to not spoil it. But if you want to talk about it, send us a direct message, man. We would love to talk about the Star Wars Resistance with you. And if you want to get your feedback in for the episode for our next recording, go ahead and get it in now. You can send it to us via DM on Twitter at Resist Reactions. You can message us on Facebook. If you find us there, just search Resistance Reactions. It'll pull us right up. Links, of course, will be all in the show notes. And, of course, you can email us resistancereactions@gmail.com. And, of course, if you want to continue talking Star Wars with David or I individually. David, what's the best way for somebody to contact you to talk Resistance or even Rebels?
Absolutely. I would love it. You and I would both love it. You and I enjoy this even when we're not recording. So two different places. My Twitter is David_Motters, right? David_Motters. And then the email is dmotters@coffeewithkenobi.com.
Perfect. And of course, for myself, you can find me on Twitter at TAHarris121079. Or of course, you can email me aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. I don't know what I was thinking there. aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. So definitely check us out there. And of course, like I said, Facebook as well. We got the new Facebook community growing. So join that. I'll be overseeing that as well. So definitely plenty of ways to talk Star Wars. And if you want to expand out past Rebels and Resistance, as we're covering here, do that. We love talking Star Wars in general all over. If you're looking for more Star Wars goodness, don't hesitate to check out the rest of our Coffee with Kenobi family of podcasts. Our flagship show, Coffee with Kenobi, is hosted by Dan Z, and definitely gets you the latest in Star Wars news and analysis there. Of course, Comics with Kenobi. If you like comic books, check out Comics with Kenobi. Great show hosted by Matt and Jeff. They're the ones that got me into comics to begin with. I never read them until I started listening to their show, and then all of a sudden I started reading comics and started buying comics. And my wife shakes her head at me every time I walk in with a new comic, which is quite regularly now. But definitely check out their show. If you like the Expanded Universe books, the what's now called the Legends books. Check out Legends Library, hosted by Randy and Luke. They do a great job reviewing those books, and there's so many of them out there to review. And they're doing a fantastic job going through that whole collection of books. Ultimately, we have Lattes with Leia, with Amy and Dr. Andrea. They do a phenomenal job just exploring Star Wars and fandom from the fangirl perspective, and it's just great. A great conversation. And I always look forward to find out what they're drinking this week, because it's always something different.
Well, the other thing too, Aaron, is Amy's got a book coming out that was just, Women of the Galaxy, and it was really showcased at New York Comic Con this past weekend, and I'm excited for her. I know all of us have wished her congratulations, because she's part of our Coffee with Kenobi network, and you know, just so happy for her, and she's so excited about it. In fact, I just finished Lattes with Leia, the newest one that they recorded just before she went to New York Comic Con, and she's so humble. She didn't really want to, you know, kind of plug her book, but she's like, I got to do it, you know, and she says, you can just hear it in her. There's such a humbleness to her, and I think that's why she's so well-liked by the fans in the Star Wars community, as well as when you see her by the voice actors or Dave Filoni or any of the people who are a part of Star Wars. People just genuinely like her.
Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I can't wait to get my hands on that book myself. I'm really looking forward to picking that up and adding it to my collection and letting my girls flip through it as well. And that they can see what kind of impact women have had on the Star Wars universe. It's going to be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. The last show, of course, you can listen to, of course, is our other show, Rebels Reactions. Of course, it goes back exploring all the episodes of the animated show Star Wars Rebels. And you can check that out there at coffeewithkenobi.com. So, with that being said, David, thank you so much for joining me on this adventure as we soar through the Resistance episodes. Star Wars Resistance is going to be a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to this new season.
Oh, me too, buddy. It's going to be a lot of fun. We always do have fun, and hopefully the listeners will just get a kick out of us you know, reviewing it and giving each other a hard time, but ultimately just really enjoying the Star Wars community.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to be great. Hope you'll join us back next week. We thank you all for listening, and for those of you that wrote in, thank you so much. We hope you write in again, and the rest of you, I hope you'll write in as well for our next episode, which we'll be recording next week on Triple Dark. It's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of greatness going on in the future. David, again, thank you. For everybody listening, thank you for listening. Remember, this is The Resistance Podcast you're looking for.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Aaron, and I'm here with David, and we're continuing our review. Carabast. We are continuing our
review. We could call it a Kaz moment instead of Carabast.
Yeah, we could call it a Kaz moment at that point.
He's kind of all over the place, yes.
Very true. I still like Carabast better. Just flows off the tongue better than Kaz. Anyway, we're continuing. Okay. Start over again.